Hello, Sunsouth listeners. This is Andy Bombic, which means once again it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour I'll be reading picture books, and then the second half hour I'm going to continue with a novel that I've been reading now for a little over 2 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled Sometimes It's Storks. And then The Lonely Mailman. A Practical Present for Filipina Pheasant. An Unexpected Light. And if we have time, I'll finish up the first half hour with A Box of Butterflies. So, it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled Sometimes It's Storks. Babies arrive by different means, on rickshaws, beast, or submarines. And some, indeed, do come by wing. A bundle of baby, blanket, and string. Yes, by bird, it's true. And this is how it was with you. The day was set, we called New York, and they decreed you'd come by stork. But the stork they chose was prone to think of nothing else but food and drink. And when struggling to flap you here, as in fact he was quite near, he got distracted by a fish that looked like quite a tasty dish. So he placed you on a rock, far too close to a thieving croc, who floated you away downstream to give you to his friend the bream. The fish then sold you to a whale as part exchange for ginger ale. The whale took off for the northern pole, with you atop his great blowhole. And when he finally got you there, he plopped you with a polar bear, who kept you as a midnight snack for eating in his winter shack. But as he slept, you crawled onto an 8-dog sled that was passing through, which dropped you with a lady moose who knew of a migrating goose, who flew across the sea and land and dropped you in the Aussie sand, where a hermit crab found you, a tiny chap whom you outgrew, who passed you to a kangaroo, who lost you at the Brisbane Zoo, where, for some strange unknown reason, they kept you there for half a season, before you got just far too chunky to still be shown there as a monkey. Then, seeing the tag upon your knee, they finally saw you belonged to me. So they sent you here in the parcel post, flown in via the Ivory Coast. So at last you reached your home, your package lying all alone. And when we opened up the door, we smiled and smiled at what we saw. And right there beside your head, there was a letter to be read. This package from the Brisbane Zoo contains something owned by you. So this is how it came to be that you adventured here to me, at our home where you belong, where the stork was heading all along. The Lonely Mailman. Every morning, just as the sun is rising, the old mailman leaves his house with a bag full of letters. He climbs onto his bicycle and sets off on his way. The mailman goes to each door, rings the bell, and only says 4 words. Squirrel, letter for you. He whispers so quietly that even he can hardly hear the words. Hedgehog, letter for you. Dear Squirrel, sorry about pricking you yesterday when I bumped into you at the market. To make up for it, come over for dinner at 8 and don't be late, hedgehog. Dear Hedgehog, I know you pricked me yesterday, but don't worry, I know you didn't mean to. If you invite me for dinner, we can have a chat. I'll be there at 8, so see you then, Squirrel. Sometimes the animals that live in the forest offer him a cup of coffee, but the mailman always smiles, says, "No, thank you," and rides off in a cloud of dust. Dormouse, letter for you. Sorry, Dormouse, I only realized yesterday that I was tapping away next to your nest. I know how much you like the rest, so I'm off to find another tree to peck. Woodpecker. He never gets off his bicycle. Woodpecker, letter for you. Dear Woodpecker, the tree where you started to peck is next to my nest, and now I can hardly sleep. Couldn't you move to another tree? Dormouse. The animals see him cycling through the forest every day, but they hardly know him. Butterfly, letter for you. In fact, nobody knows anything about the mailman at all. Turtle, letter for you. Beautiful butterflies, there's plenty of room on my shell where you can sunbathe in peace and quiet. And if it starts to rain, you can all come inside for a cup of tea. Turtle. Dear wise old turtle, we'd love to come and visit you, to flutter around and keep you cool, and sit a while on your lovely shell, listening to your tales while we enjoy the sun. The butterflies. Some of the animals think that the mailman is sad, and that's why he doesn't say much. Bear, letter for you. But nobody really knows because nobody's ever asked him. Rabbit, letter for you. Dear Bear, when I see you swimming in the lake, I want to be there with you. But I feel a bit scared because I am afraid to get water in my ears and I can't swim. Rabbit. Dear Rabbit, I've had a great idea for when I'm bathing in the lake. You can climb up on my back just as if I were a big old boat. Bear. All through the day, the old mailman rides around delivering mail in the forest. He visits the wolf, the deer, the frogs, the beaver, the fox, the skunk, and the fish in the river. At last, the sun sets, and the mailman has no more letters in his bag. Feeling very tired, he heads home. Every night, the old mailman sits down in the flickering candlelight and writes letters. They are the letters he'll be delivering the next day. Invitations, apologies, plans, and messages full of love. He writes and writes until he's exhausted, then falls fast asleep on top of his typewriter. One day, when the mailman is just about to finish his round, something amazing happens. The last letter has his name and his address written on the envelope. It's a letter for him. The mailman nervously heads home. It's the first time he's ever had a letter. When he arrives, he puts it in the mailbox and whispers four words. Mailman, letter for you. Then he opens the mailbox, takes out the letter, and enters his house. Dear mailman, for a long time, your letters have filled our days with love and happiness. But now we've discovered your secret, and we want to thank you. Most of all, we want to share our happiness with you, the forest animals. The old mailman feels a big lump in his throat, and his eyes fill with tears. Suddenly, the old doorbell lets out a rusty squeak. It's the first time anyone has ever come to the mailman's door. He plucks up his courage and opens the door. Outside, the forest animals are waiting. When they see him, they all rush over. The old mailman smiles and blushes amongst all the cheers and hugs. Then he begins to think about all the letters he'll be writing tonight. a practical present for Filipina pheasant. This is a story about a bright little bird named Filipina pheasant, who lives in a forest near the village of Fairhurst. Every afternoon, Filipina pheasant would cross Old Oak Road to peck at the delicious blackberries growing on the other side. But every afternoon, almost always, something fast would whiz past out of nowhere. Filipina would shoot into the air with a cry of surprise. And when she glided back down, she would always be so flustered. Filipina was fed up with being nearly knocked pancake flat every time she crossed the road. "I've had enough," she squawked to her friend, Hedgehog. "Why don't you write a letter to the mayor?" he suggested. "What a good idea," cried Filipina. So Filippa did just that and mailed it, but she didn't receive a response. As it happened, the very next day, Filippa spotted something very interesting as she ambled down the street. A tall woman in a bright yellow uniform was helping the school children cross the road. Filippa had never seen anything like it. It gave her a brilliant idea. Filippa hunted high and low through the woods and fields and hedge groves. "What are you making, Filippa?" asked Mouse. "Come to the old oak tomorrow," she said, "and I'll show you." So Mouse spread the word, and the next morning, a crowd of critters was waiting. "What in goodness' name are you wearing?" asked Squirrel. "Ah," said Filippa, "this is a special uniform that stops cars. All of us know some poor soul who has been squished pancake flat on an evening stroll. But if you come to this tree, I'll help you cross without a scratch." And that's what they did. And that's what she did. "If you wouldn't mind, Filippa," the animals would say. And out into the road she'd step, wearing her homemade crossing guard outfit. Very soon, the whole village knew about the peculiar pheasant who helped the woodland creatures cross Old Oak Road. "Did you see that odd little bird?" they said to each other. Filippa was in the papers. Filippa was on the news. Filippa was a triumph. Everyone wanted to congratulate the mayor on his crossing guard idea. But the mayor was not impressed. "That bird has nothing to do with me," he insisted. That evening at dinner with his daughter, Cornyn, and their cat, Darling Treasure, the mayor was quiet. No one asked about his bake sale or tree planting scheme or village fair anymore. So late that night, Darling Treasure decided to sneak out to see this fearless fall for herself. But as Darling Treasure pattered past street lamps and trees and along alone winding streets, she soon found herself quite lost. After a short doze, the mayor awoke and found Darling Treasure missing. He was distraught. He was panicked. He searched the whole house, and Corian even checked the attic. They knocked on their neighbors' doors. Just about the whole village piled out of their houses, armed with their flashlights. "Darling Treasure," they called. "Darling Treasure!" Meanwhile, in the forest, a mewling sound roused Filippa from her sleep, and she saw the shivering shape of Darling Treasure below. "Are you all right?" she asked. "I'm completely lost," sniffled the cat. Filippa quickly donned her uniform and said, "Come on, let's get you home." They hadn't taken more than a few steps when Filippa heard a car coming. She took a deep breath and stepped out into the road. It was the mayor. He screeched on his brakes, jumped out of his car, and swept Darling Treasure up into his arms. Then he and Corin scooped up Philippa and hugged her too. "Thank you," they said. Darling Treasure purred in agreement. When they got home, Darling Treasure slept off her ordeal on Corin's lap, and the mayor wrote a letter. And the next morning, it arrived at Philippina Pheasant's tree, inviting her to the village hall. Philippa preened her feathers to perfection and headed into town, where the whole village was waiting. The mayor called Philippa to the stage, then held out a little box and announced, "I'd like to give a very special present to our dear Philippa Pheasant to show how grateful we all are." Inside was an official crossing guard uniform, just her size. And when Philippa returned home that afternoon, there was another surprise waiting, a crosswalk. From that day on, no one was squashed pancake flat ever again. And if you're lucky enough to find yourself outside the village of Fairhurst, you might just spot a brave little bird named Philippa. The first and finest crossing guard pheasant. And if you should pass by after sunset, you might find one of her nocturnal friends, newly trained, starting his nighttime shift. An unexpected light. Given how few suckling pigs they had sold, my grandparents decided to sell the rest of the litter at a market in Santorum for a better price and without any further unnecessary expenditure. The journey would be made on foot, 4 country leagues at piglet pace, so that the animals would arrive at the fair ready, they hoped, to find a buyer. They asked if I would like to go along as my youngest uncle's helper, and I said, "Yes, just try and stop me." I polished my boots in readiness for the trek, and from the porch chose the walking stick best suited to my lanky 12-year-old body. We set off in the afternoon, my uncle bringing up the rear so that he wouldn't lose a single piglet, while I went on ahead with the sow at my heels. I imagined myself to be like a figurehead on the prow of a ship, advancing along the roads and paths, just as the pirate ships I had read about in adventure stories once plowed the waves. Now and then, my uncle would swap places with me, and I would have to swallow the dust kicked up by the piglet's little feet. In the middle, the sow, the birth mother of some and the adoptive mother of others, kept them all together. It was almost dark when we reached the farm where we would stay until the following morning. We put the pigs in a pen and ate the frugal meal we had brought with us, sitting beneath a brightly lit window, because we didn't want to go into the house, or perhaps we hadn't been invited. While we were eating, one of the farmhands came to tell us that we could sleep in the stables. He provided us with a woolen blanket each, then left. The dogs were let out then, so we had no option but to go to sleep. The stable door remained open all night, which suited us perfectly because we would have to leave in the early hours, long before the sun came up, in order to arrive in time for the Santorum market. Our bed was at one end of a manger that filled the whole length of the wall. The horses snorted and stamped on the paved floor strewn with straw. I lay down as if in a cradle, wrapped in my blanket and breathing in the ripe smell of the horses, who remained restless all night, or so it seemed to me, in my fitful sleep. I felt tired, my feet sore. The darkness was warm and thick, the horses kept fiercely shaking their manes, and yet my uncle slept through it all. The noises of the night glided past us over the roof, and I slept the sleep of the just, as my grandmother would have said, had she been there. My uncle woke me very early. I sat up in the manger and looked over at the door, my sleepy eyes dazzled by an unexpected light. I jumped down and went out to the courtyard, before me pouring a milky light over the night and the surrounding landscape, was a huge round moon, making the white seem still whiter where the light struck it full on, and the black shadows still deeper. And even though, as I said, I was only 12 years old, I sensed that I would never see another moon like it. We rounded up the pigs and went down into the valley, treading very carefully because the hillside was full of brambles and boulders, and the piglets, unaccustomed to the morning darkness, could easily go astray. Once in the valley, it was much easier. We walked past vineyards ready to be picked, and, jumping into the middle of the rows of vines, I stole 2 big bunches of grapes and stuffed them down my shirt, all the while looking around to see if there was a guard about. I returned to the path and gave 1 bunch to my uncle. We walked along eating the sweet, cold grapes as firm as if they had been crystallized. We began climbing the hill to Santorium as the sun was rising. We spent the morning and part of the afternoon at the market. We didn't sell all the piglets, which is why we had to make the return journey on foot. It was then that the thing that would never happen again happened. A ring of clouds formed above us, and as the sun was setting, these grew dark and a heavy rain began to fall. Yet, for a long time, we walked along without a single drop falling on us, all the while encircled by a curtain of rain that concealed the horizon. Finally, the clouds disappeared, and night approached slowly through the olive trees. The animals made those noises that sound like an endless conversation. My uncle, walking ahead of me, was whistling very softly. And all of this filled me with a great desire to weep. No one could see me, and yet I could see the whole world. It was then that I swore to myself that I would never die. A Box of Butterflies. And they all lived happily ever after, the end, said Robot. I love that story, said Ruby. Did you love it too? Robot is just a machine. Robot cannot feel love. Robot paused for a moment and said, what does love feel like? Ruby replied, love feels like a box of butterflies, like a colorful dancing kite, like drinking in a sunset, like a firefly in the night. Where does love come from? Asked Robot. It comes from inside, said Ruby. I can't see anything, said Robot. You can't see it, only feel it, said Ruby. It's an emotion. You might feel other ones, too. One is green and spiky like a twisted thistle. That's jealousy. I sometimes feel that way when my best friend plays with someone else. One is hot, like a coal on the fire, and smokes up through your head like a volcano. That's anger. I sometimes feel that way when I'm told, no more TV. One is cold, like a heavy stone pressing on your tummy. That's fear. I sometimes feel that way when the lights go out at night. One is like a little fly that buzzes around your head and sits on your nose. That's worry. I sometimes feel that way when I can't find my special blanket. One is like raindrops falling from a big blue cloud. That's sadness. I sometimes feel that way on the last day of our vacation. Those don't sound so nice, said Robot. It's okay, Robot. Those feelings come and go, just like happy ones. Everyone feels them sometimes, she said, and gently hugged him. Then something began to happen, something that had never happened to Robot before. Robot began to feel something, something fluttery, something uplifting, something warm, something glowing inside him. Love. Okay, I'm going to finish up the first half hour of today's program with Felix's new skirt. Felix liked to wear skirts. The wider, the better. My legs get a lot of air, he said. Can I wear your green dress? Felix asked his sister, Ava. The one with the glittery flowers? Only if I get your black jeans, Ava said, opening her wardrobe. Felix laughed and gave his sister a big hug. Mom, Ava called, Felix needs his own dresses. A red one, Felix added, jumping on the bed with one of Ava's long dresses. At the department store, Felix tugged his mom toward the girls' clothes. Do you have red skirts? He asked the salesperson. Felix pushed hangers with colorful clothes back and forth. Look, Mom, Felix said when he found the perfect one. His eyes shone as he held up a red pleated skirt. Well, let's see if it fits, Mom said, gently caressing his curly blonde hair. The salesperson smiled. You've got a beautiful girl, she said. Felix is a boy, Mom corrected her, and he loves skirts. Then the salesperson stopped smiling. Can I wear my new skirt to school tomorrow? Felix asked. Dad wrinkled his forehead, looking serious. Mom and Ava were both quiet. Some people might not understand, Dad said, hugging him. I think you should wear pants for your first day. Dad took Felix to school each morning, but each day Felix was less and less excited to go. When can I wear my red skirt? Felix asked, pulling at his jeans, twisting his mouth into a frown. Maybe tomorrow, Dad whispered. The next day, Felix dashed out the front door in his red pleated skirt. Dad smiled uneasily and took his hand. When they arrived, Felix exclaimed, "Look how my red skirt spins!" He was practically dancing. But the other kids laughed at him. "You look like a girl," they shouted, pointing at him. "Real boys don't wear dresses. Why don't you go play with someone else?" "That's inappropriate," the other parents whispered to each other. "What kind of parent allows his child to do something like that?" Felix was sad that no one wanted to play with him today. Raindrops pattered against the window, joining up and running down the glass. The other kids played together, but when they looked in Felix's direction, they pointed and giggled. He waited for the day to end with tears in his eyes. Now Felix didn't feel like going to school anymore. He wondered, "Why don't they like my wonderful skirt? I can run faster and climb more easily. Why would they think Mom and Dad are bad? What have they done?" "It's not fair that girls are allowed to wear pants, but boys can't wear skirts," Felix told his dad. I should be able to wear whatever I like. You're right, Felix, his dad said, but other people aren't always so considerate. Felix whispered, is there anything you can do to help me? Together they returned to the department store. Do you have a long skirt in my size? Felix's dad asked the salesperson, winking at Felix. Felix couldn't believe it. For the next few days, or the two of them, walked around town wearing their skirts. People glared at them and shook their heads. Felix just waved back and laughed. One woman approached them, ranting, "You're wearing a skirt. You can't do that." She stared at them for so long she stumbled into a street sign. Felix gave her a hand. "Did you hurt yourself?" he asked. "I'm okay," she said. "Are you a boy?" "Sure," Felix answered, taking his dad's hand. The next morning, Felix announced, "I want to go back to school. I'm ready." Mom and Ava both breathed a sigh of relief. Dad walked Felix to school as always. "You're wearing a skirt too?" one boy asked Felix's dad. Dad nodded. "Today, anybody can wear a skirt. Did nobody tell you?" The boy shook his head with astonishment. "You look funny in girls' clothes," another boy said to Felix. "Is that bad?" Felix replied. The boy shrugged his shoulders. "Boys have to wear pants. Only girls wear skirts." "Isn't that unfair?" Felix said. "I want to wear what I like. And for me, that's skirts and dresses." He gave his skirt a twirl. From that day on, no one asked if he was a boy or a girl. They simply called him Felix. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for a little over 2 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Darcy believes in love at first sight. She's spent her whole life waiting for that perfect, magical moment. But right now, her life is anything but perfect. After a music festival, she's stranded at a bus station until morning. The day before she leaves for college. Her phone is dead, she has no cash, and she's convinced nothing good can come of this night. But then she meets Russell. Russell, cute and nice, funny and kind. This is the moment, and the guy, she's been waiting for. And they have until sunrise to walk and talk and connect. Over the course of this one fateful night, filled with football field picnics, night swimming, and escape artist dogs, Darcy and Russell's lives will change forever. They'll discover things they never imagined about each other and about themselves. But can you really know someone after only a handful of hours? Is it possible to fall in love in just one day? And is it worth saying hello when you know you're destined for a goodbye? Okay, last week, while they're at the high school football field eating Mexican food, on the field, lying down, Darcy and Russell talked about their favorite book, Theus's Sailboat, and Darcy's favorite band, Nighthawks, who happened to be her father's favorite band also. They're now lying down beside each other, looking up at a beautiful sunset, when Russell asks Darcy if she's ever seen the Sistine Chapel. And that's where I left off last week. We just lay there next to each other for a moment, looking up, the silence easy and comfortable between us. I turned my head to look at him. He was so close to me. I could have reached out and touched him without even having to extend my arm all the way. "Have you ever seen the Sistine Chapel?" Russell asked. "The what? In Italy?" "Yeah." "Well, not in person. I've seen pictures, though." "Well, when you go and see it, there are all these signs everywhere saying you're not allowed to lie down, like in every different language, and with pictures and everything." "Okay." So I was there with my family. We were all together, seeing it as a group with a guide. And after they'd told us all about it, the rest of my family started to leave. And I saw my moment. You lay down? I had to do it. I wanted to see it from that perspective, like Michelangelo would have. And it was incredible. Truly, it's almost too much to take in. Overwhelming, but in a good way. Did you get in trouble? Oh, yeah, he said immediately, and I laughed. I only had a few moments before the guards were running toward me, yelling in Italian, and our guide was admonishing me. He turned back to look at the sky, folding his arms behind his head. But I haven't seen anything else that felt like that until now. I looked back at the sky. I know, it's so beautiful. Yeah, Russell said, but I turned and saw that he was no longer looking up at the sky. He was looking at me. My breath caught in my throat. I felt like we were on the border of an undiscovered country, at a threshold we'd been moving toward since the moment we first met. And it was scary and exciting, but right, like every step had been in the right direction and led us here. I smiled at Russell, even though my heart was beating so wildly. I was pretty sure he could probably hear it. He looked at me for a moment longer, his eyes searching mine. Then he rolled over so that he was on his side, leaning on his elbow. He reached out and touched my face gently with the back of his hand, tracing the curve of my cheek and making me shiver. Darcy, he said. A second later, he shook his head. I honestly can't believe that's your name. What about it? He hesitated. Nothing. It suits you. You'll be what I think of when I hear the name from now on. And you're the first Russell I've met. I've never known another one. Most people say the kid from up. That kid was awesome. Great Russell representation. You should be proud. He gave a half laugh, and then we lapsed back into silence again. But it wasn't simply comfortable now. It was charged with everything we were on the verge of. I was all too aware that it would take just a single step for us to cross over, like a line of dominoes, a breath away from tipping over and causing a cascade. I summoned my courage and did what I'd been wanting to do since I first saw him, bent over our favorite book at the bus station. I stretched my hand up and ran my fingers through his hair, tangling them in his curls. Russell caught my hand in his, threading his fingers through mine, and even though his hand was a lot bigger, I couldn't help but notice how nicely our hands fit together, how good my hand felt in his. He played with my silver-spun bracelets and then kissed the back of my hand. When he did this, I felt a thrill that extended through me all the way to my toes. Then Russell turned my hand over and traced the inside of my palm with his index finger, slow spirals and lazy figure eights, making my breath come more shallowly. It was all amazing, just like I'd known it would be. We hadn't even kissed yet, and it felt like I was on the verge of exploding. He ran two fingers around my palm in a slow circle, then bent his head, kissed my palm, and traced his mouth down my hand to the inside of my wrist. I had never thought much about this particular part of my hand before. When Katie got a tattoo there on her 18th birthday, she cried through the whole thing. And afterward, the tattoo artist told her she'd picked a particularly tricky spot for a first tattoo. That inside of your wrist is all nerve endings. I understood that now, with Russell's lips feathery and soft, tracing the inside of my wrist. Suddenly, I was feeling everything a lot more than usual, like every nerve in my body was suddenly awake. He kissed the inside of my wrist, and I gasped when I felt his tongue on my skin, his teeth scraping lightly over it. He raised his head up and kissed my palm again, and then the back of my hand, like we had all the time in the world, and like he knew just what he was doing. He traced my hand down my cheek again and looked at me like he was drinking me in. "Hi." "Hi," I said, slightly breathless, feeling very certain. I was not going to be able to wait more than a few more seconds before kissing him. It was actually not going to be physically possible. We hovered there for just a moment in the space between the anticipation building and stretching out, and then he tilted his head down. We both closed our eyes, and Russell kissed me. I stretched up to kiss him back, our lips slightly brushing at first, but then it was like we both took a breath at the same time and started kissing for real. And he was really good, and we were good together, finding a rhythm right away, our lips and breath fitting together as easily as our hands had. Russell lifted my hand. He hadn't stopped holding it this whole time, and placed it above me in the grass, then traced his fingertips down my arm, all while continuing to kiss me, which was good because I didn't want him to stop. We were kissing in waves almost, first fast and breathless, then slowing down, taking our time exploring. But then he'd give a shuddering breath or lightly bite the inside of my bottom lip, and that would be all I'd need to start kissing him quickly again. My arms were around him, my hands running through his hair, trying to pull him even closer to me. Russell broke away and kissed my neck. He started in the hollow of my collarbone, the little indentation there, then traveled slowly upward, finally stopping just under my chin, where I could feel my pulse thundering wildly. He rolled over a little closer to me, one of his legs tangled in between mine, and we were kissing again, faster now, like even that brief break had been more than either of us could handle. I don't know how much time passed. I was just living in the moment, the astroturf tickling my bare legs, and our lips and our breath, and his heartbeat, and our fingers twining together, and Russell rolling me on top of him so I could look down, seeing him below me in the glowing darkness, tracing his freckles with my lips the way I'd wanted to when I first saw them. It was like nothing existed except his lips and my hands tangling in his hair. When Russell pulled away. "Sorry, about what?" I asked, pushing myself up to sit up with my arms that felt wobbly. I knew without a doubt that if I tried to stand right now, I'd go crashing to the ground. I blinked, trying to focus. I felt flushed and kiss drunk, like everything else had gone fuzzy around the edges. He tugged at the hem of my sweatshirt, rubbing the fabric between his fingers. "I was just wondering if maybe we could do something about this." I said, looking down at my sweatshirt. "Like, turn it around or something?" He gestured to Wiley Sanders' circa 2002 pout. "It's just kind of distracting." And he said, as he leaned closer to me, tucking my hair behind my ear and then untucking it, so he could play with it, turning it between his fingers. "I really, really don't want to be distracted right now." I laughed as I looked down at my sweatshirt. From his perspective, I could understand why it really might have been a little off-putting to see a shirtless, pouting rock star in this particular moment. I could definitely turn it around, or I could take it off. I didn't let myself look away from him as I said it. "That sounds really good," he said, smiling at me, and even in the darkness, which was falling fast, I could see his cheeks had gone pink. He reached over, cupped my head in his hands, and kissed me again. Was that ever not going to feel miraculous? He slipped his hands under my sweater and started pulling it up, sliding up my rib cage. I raised my arms, and he pulled it over my head. He didn't just toss it aside, though. He shook it out and then folded it neatly, setting it near my bag on the grass, like he somehow knew, without me having to tell him, that it was important to me. "There," he said, turning to me with a smile, "much better." I laughed and leaned over to kiss him, running my hands down his arms, bare except for his watch. "We don't want you to be distracted." "That's the last thing we want," he said between kisses. He was sitting up now, too, and pulled me into his lap so that my legs were around either side of him, and I was sitting just a little taller than him looking down. I kissed his cheek, his temple. He closed his eyes when I did that and kind of sighed. His neck, his lips again, and then I drew back. "You okay?" "Yeah," I said, even as I untangled myself from him and looked around. "Do you think that the bathroom here would be unlocked?" All at once, I was cursing myself for not going into the cowgirl bathroom back at the bus station. Why hadn't I anticipated that it might be the last one I was going to see for a while? I was suddenly regretting my sprite. He laughed, and I could see relief in his eyes. That I wasn't pushing him away, that this was literally just nature calling. "That's a very good question, and now that you mention it, one that I could also use the answer to." He pushed himself up to standing and squinted over at the area behind the home bleachers, where there was what looked like a locked concession counter, and on either side of it, the bathrooms. "I'm going to check." He bent down to kiss me once, quickly, before starting to jog over to them. "Be right back." I lay back against the grass, like Russell had felt, lying on a floor in Rome and looking up at a painting on the ceiling. I felt overwhelmed, but in a good way, by everything that had just happened. While we'd been kissing, the sunset had almost totally faded out, and the first stars were starting to appear. I looked around the football field, the goalpost, the scoreboard. It didn't seem possible that these things were the same, but absolutely everything else had changed. "All right," Russell said as he jogged back onto the field and I sat up. "So, good news and bad news." "Bad news first," he smiled. "Okay, so the bathrooms are locked, but I walked to the top of the bleachers and I think I saw somewhere we can go." "Oh, yeah?" He nodded, and I pushed myself up to standing. And sure enough, my legs felt wobbly. Russell reached out his hand to steady me, and I gave it a squeeze. "In that case, lead on." Chapter 6, Sunday, 7:45 p.m. It turned out that the Silver Standard Hotel was only a 10-minute walk from the high school. Russell had seen the sign from the top of the bleachers, and we found the hotel with only a couple of wrong turns. It was a 3-story smallish building done in the faux old western style. There was a front entrance with a circular driveway and a parking lot around the back. The name of the hotel was spelled out under a neon 10-gallon hat that needed some repair. The brim of the hat seemed to have trouble staying on. "Free HBO" was painted on a sign that hung from the hat. And something about the font and the fact that they were advertising this at all made me think it was a few decades old. The vacancy in the sign was illuminated, the "no dark." Presumably, everyone who had been staying here for the festival, had headed home as soon as it was over. "Okay," Russell said to me as we stood just off to the side of the entrance. "So I'm betting the bathroom is past reception. There has to be one somewhere in the lobby." I'd just go in, walk fast, but not run, just like you have somewhere to be. "They're not going to stop you." "Are you sure?" I asked as I peered through the sliding glass doors, trying to get a look at the reception desk, but just seeing a potted plant blocking my view. I looked down at my tank top and jean shorts, my silver spun bracelets. Was I immediately going to be pegged as an interloper? "Do you want me to go in first? I could scout it out, give you the lay of the land." "Really? Sure," he said with a smile as he squeezed my hand and leaned down to kiss me. Then he took his phone out of his bag and held it up to his ear as he headed inside. "Uh-huh," I heard him say to nobody as he walked through the automatic glass doors. "Right. Interesting." I took a step away from the door, still feeling Russell's kiss on my lips, and leaned back against the brick of the building, taking a moment to try to process everything. How was this happening? "Oh my God," Katie shrieked. "Calm down," Dee Dee muttered. "Oh, Shent, oh my God." "It was exciting," Dee Dee acknowledged. "I just don't want Darcy to lose sight of reality. She's not in one of her movies." "Maybe she is," Katie swooned. "Lose sight of reality, Darcy. Love it entirely. Who needs reality? How often does something like this occur?" "What's going to happen tomorrow?" Dee Dee asked, startling me. Which really shouldn't have been so startling, since this whole conversation was taking place inside my head. But I hadn't even allowed myself to think past one moment at a time, taking things as they came. And I realized a second later that I didn't want to. This whole night felt like a miracle. It was turning me into the heroine of a cinematic love story all my own. Worrying about the future, by contrast, felt like the antithesis of sweeping romance. And a sweeping romance was what I had, for the first time ever, found myself in. "Darcy's deciding things again," Dee Dee said with a sigh. "But she's right for once," Katie protested. "She shouldn't worry about tomorrow. Maybe there won't even be a tomorrow. There could be an apocalypse. There could be the rapture. This could be the last night on Earth. And I think Darcy would really regret it if she didn't spend it kissing a cute guy." Okay, Russell had returned, and as soon as I saw him, I smiled automatically like a reflex. He smiled back at me. Maybe he just experienced the same thing. So there was no problem at all. I just walked straight past the desk, and then the bathrooms are off to the left down a little hallway. "Awesome, I'll be right back." I pulled out my dead phone and stepped through the doors into the lobby. A second later, though, I wondered if it would look suspicious for Russell and I to have done this back-to-back. One teenager walking through a lobby having a one-sided conversation was one thing, but two? In quick succession? I decided maybe I shouldn't risk it. I dropped my phone in my canvas bag, but that half second of not looking where I was going must have been enough, because when I looked up again, I saw that there was a large dog barreling toward me, towing a small child who did not look like they were at all capable of handling this dog. The dog probably weighed more than the kid did. I tried to step out of the way, but the dog, it looked like some kind of lab, but with a more squashed face, lunged toward me, jumping up, tongue flopping out of its mouth, and tail wagging fast, whapping the kid every time. Down, I said, taking another step to the side and trying to give the dog a pat on the head. Good dog, nice buddy. We'd never had a dog. I begged for one every year until I realized, sometime around fifth grade, that we weren't ever getting one and stopped asking. Did you fill out the pet waiver? I looked over and realized that the woman behind the desk was talking to me. She looked like she was in her 40s, with red hair that appeared dyed, cut into a blunt bob. This hairstyle and her expression contrasted mightily with the cowboy hat that was perched jauntily atop her head. There was a guy on the phone next to her, and I saw he was also wearing one, so clearly this was part of the uniform at the Silver Standard Hotel. Not just a fashion choice. Oh, I said, taking another step away from the kid and his happy, drooling dog. No, I'm not with them. Brinkley, I heard a voice call from across the lobby, and a harried-looking mom came running up. I didn't know if she was talking to the kid or the dog. Both seemed possible. I used this commotion to edge past them, but I could feel eyes on me. And as I glanced back before taking the hallway to the left that Russell had told me about, I saw that the red-haired lady behind the desk was watching me. Her eyes narrowed. I looked away quickly and kept my head down as I pushed open the door to the bathroom. When I was done washing my hands, I dug my tiny toiletry bag out of my canvas tote, beyond glad that it had come with me and hadn't ended up in my duffel. There wasn't a ton in there, a foldable hairbrush, mints, a lipstick, lip gloss, also an emergency tampon, Advil, and liner, because I'd learned the hard way what happened when I didn't have those things on me at all times. And unfortunately, this is where I'm going to have to stop today because we are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners and also happy Valentine's Day to all the listeners. And I hope that everyone joins me next week when I continue reading the novel, The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Happy Valentine's Day. Goodbye.